You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Coming up on today's episode, we recap the new-look Jets' victory over the Capitals, including the debuts of Toffoli and Miller.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good, and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right, good to be back at it here. Hope you guys had yourselves a great weekend, and we finally got our first glimpse of the new-look Winnipeg Jets, and they did not disappoint with a pretty dominant performance against the Washington Capitals. We'll break that one down for you guys, including the new guys and how they looked. And boy, oh boy, did we need them in after that stinker Saturday night in Vancouver. Bounce back, to say the least, against the Capitals. So we'll get into that one with you guys right now. And to do so with me once again is CJOB's Tyson Rewicki. Tyson, pulling off the Berkey right now after a shift at Canada Life Center. How we doing?
We're doing good. Doing good, yeah. Just got fresh off the shift. And now we're here. No place I'd rather be after a Jet game.
Oh, well, isn't that sweet? I don't believe you.
The underdogs.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't believe you, but that's nice to say. Yeah, I mean, what a difference 48 hours makes. You got Bones doing the old post-playoff series loss to Vegas, crackdown of his team, Saturday night in Vancouver, to a pretty flawless performance against, to be fair, a Capitals team that is, nowhere near the level that they've been, for a decade prior to that. But having said all that, obviously a much, much different Winnipeg Jets team on Monday night at home ice. And really, you know, we kind of talked about this before we came on. Kind of a boring game, but yes, it wasn't aesthetically pleasing per se. But sometimes, and especially in, 16, 18 games to go in the season, you know, boring, clinical, choke it up style hockey is exactly what you need, especially against teams that are well below the playoff bubble. So, it wasn't a, end-to-end barn burner or anything like that, but that was a professional performance by the Winnipeg Jets. And definitely one of the easier shutouts Connor Hellebuyck has had in a Winnipeg Jets uniform.
Yeah, like he was. I think the toughest save Helly had to make was probably in the first period there, off that kind of stretched out the left pad. Because other than that, or even the Abe Kubel slap shot right at the end, but other than those two, like it wasn't. They didn't really have any sustained chances, and that's exactly what you want as a Jets team. Like that's what Rick Bonus wants to preach to this team, and they played a really good game. Like you mentioned, it wasn't an exciting game, but it was like a really well-played game by the Jets to limit chances, control play in the capital zone. And I mean, they're going low to high like nobody's business that whole game in the O-zone against the Capitals. Like the Capitals had no answer. It was the guys were on pucks. And I think one of the things that really got me fired up for a playoff run here was one of that shift near the end of the third where Nino just turned.
Oh, the Nino shift.
Wrecking ball. Like the game's over, man. I love it, but it was just, I couldn't. That's something that doesn't happen on the Jets team 2 years ago or a year ago, right? Like, that's, they have a different mentality, and they brought that mentality into this game.
Yeah, that was I didn't hear no bell. Nino was, it was, yeah, that was a beautiful shift. But yeah, but it's funny because I, you know, to me, the Capitals and then watching the Penguins over the weekend, those two teams are the definition of Cancun on three. One, two, three, Cancun. Like, they're like, it's already, the trips have been made. Let's just get through the final month of the season healthy. That to me was the difference between a non-playoff team and a playoff team. Nino going, you know, hero mode there. Unfortunate he didn't get rewarded with a goal. But yeah, you're right, Tysa. The luxury of having an El Nino on line three is going to be evident come game one of whoever the Jets end up facing. Quickly, just because I think we're both in agreement that the Jets played a very, very strong game. I'm not surprised by it after the fallout from the matchup against the Canucks. Did you think Bones was oddly critical of his team against Vancouver? I mean, they didn't play good. I'm not gonna like argue against that, but he was really going at him there, and I was kind of like, man, I don't know. It's the second end of a back to back. You know, you're traveling through different time zones. You played Seattle, even though Seattle's not good. They skate you into the ice every single night. It was kind of like I don't know. I almost wonder if he was like, this is mind games, you know, like psych 101. You know, I'm just trying to get my boys, you know, ready to go and sharp for the stretch run here. But, I, you know, just like going back to that for a sec, leading into how well they played in this game, I was just kind of, yeah, I thought it was a little bizarre and odd that that was the game that Bones decided to crack the whip on.
Well, and I wonder if Bones has a little bit of a, like, he's blocking some bad memories from last season, because there was some truly, truly awful games last year where, like, compared to that one, for him to say that this is the worst, I don't know if he meant just this season. I don't think he did, by the way that he was saying.
No, he said that he specifically said the 2 years I've been here.
Right. So, I mean, last year there was some really, really terrible games, but that's what it is. He's definitely just playing. He wants his team to continue that level of pace going into the playoffs, right? Instead of having these swings that we've been seeing over the past couple of weeks. Like, let's try and generate some solid, consistent play for a couple of weeks now. You're bringing in some additions with Toffoli and Miller at the deadline here. You know, like, they didn't get those guys for the Vancouver game. So maybe it was a little bit of, hey, let's show these guys what kind of locker room they're coming into, what kind of new culture we've built, and really let's put it on the Capitals. Let's start their road trip off on a bad note. And that's the other thing too, is that this Caps team is going to be on a long road trip coming up. And this is the first game. Yeah, exactly. But like this, they really needed this game to keep pace in the Metro division and in the Eastern Conference playoff race. And the Jets kind of just completely shut the door on them having any chance of winning that game within the first 10 minutes of that game, in my opinion. And then they just locked it down for the rest.
Yeah, no, I do believe that Bones was doing the old mind game thing, knowing that the additions were coming in for Monday's matchup, and it's almost like, you know, I'm saying it, but I don't totally believe it, but I'm just going to do it out there so that by the time Monday comes around, we're going to get this thing sorted out for the stretch run.
Do you think there's a double money on the board in this game? Like, do you think Toffoli and Miller go out there together and say, hey, we're putting this much money on the board, first game is Winnipeg Jet? Or is it just one? Is it just like the...
Well, first off, if one does it, the other one is then forced to do it. So, like, you're not gonna leave one of the new guys hanging, whoever it is. Like, you're gonna put some down right after that. Yeah, I like that. I can see that going down that way. I'm trying to think if there's any other. I mean, Brandon Dillon might have put a little bit of cash up there.
True. True.
I wonder who else. Yeah, it might have been.
It's also Fialbi from the press.
Fialbi's like half the game check. I hate the Capitals. they might be able to thank the Capitals for donating to one hell of a Jets postseason party with the money on the board for that game. Let's talk about the new look Jets and the new look Lions as well. I wonder if this is going to be up front first, the way this plays out when everybody's healthy. By everybody, I really just mean Gabe Vilardi. We see Scheifele, Connor, and Ehlers together. I thought they looked really good. I also thought Ehlers played a more a much more Shifley Connor friendly game in the offensive zone. Like, I think it was a little more predictable the way that they like it. I thought that was kind of an interesting twist, where I thought Ehlers just really simplified his game a lot more than he has in the past. Not saying it's good or bad, just saying it stood out to me at least. So I wonder if Bones is going to go with those three when everybody's healthy, and then throw Vilardi and Toffoli on that second line with Sean Monahan. But I'll tell you what, Dice, Tyler Toffoli comes as advertised, and in that first period, where is he 90% of the time? In and around the net, skates in the blue paint. He's just exactly what this team needed. I wouldn't mind seeing Ehlers and Toffoli together on whatever line they end up being on. But I thought the top line looked very solid after an off one in Vancouver there. And I think Tyler Toffoli is kind of like, I think he's going to be like this year's Nino Niederreiter, where it's, he comes right in and you can just see right off the bat that, yeah, we hit a home run with this trade.
Oh, and Toffoli was such a slick pickup. I mean, like, you could see just that extra ounces of skill that he brings to this team is just like, Jets needed that kind of, that push in their rear end. And that's exactly what Toffoli is. He pushes up the forward skill group. They have more skill throughout their lineup now. And hey, like that, when, as soon as he started coming down the wing on Ovechkin, I was like, oh, he's pulling a nasty move on him. 100%. And it's too bad that he didn't really think that he was going to get that move through Ovi. And then he's like,
I just love that he's like, could I go in on the goalie basically one-on-one and try to beat him with a wrister? No, I'm going to dangle the grade eight instead. It was literally a beauty move.
But yeah, and he puts himself in good spots on the ice. Like especially in the O-zone, it's not an overly active style per se, but like you mentioned, he's just always in and around the net, and he's going to be in those spots. He's putting himself in good spots. So a guy like that who's proven in the league to be able to score a bunch of goals, I think this is perfect for the Jets team.
Yeah, he's going to be a hell of an addition. There's no doubt about it. When everybody's healthy, Tice, what is your ideal lineup? Assuming that the bottom six stays as it is, but which I think that's like we can talk about ideal lineup in a perfect world, but Bones has kind of shown, you know, Lowry line's going to stay the way it is. Fourth line's going to stay the way it is. Top six is where the mishmashing comes in. What's your go-to top six?
I think right now I'd be going with Shifley, Connor, Vilardi, Ehlers, Monahan, Toffoli.
Even with the weeks of debate that we've had about that top line getting outscored.
Yeah. You mentioned it there, but I just think that Ehlers with Toffoli is such a more seamless fit. Whereas I feel like if you put Vilardi with Monahan and Toffoli, it's not that those guys couldn't, you know, hold their own in their own end. I bet you they would, and I bet you they do a decent job at it. But I just, to me, Vilardi, Monahan, Toffoli line is three of the exact same players. And now that could be a good thing. It could, I don't know for sure because we haven't seen them play together, but I just like having a trigger man like Toffoli with a guy like Ehlers who can open up the defense, kind of create plays off the rush, and have a guy who could trail there with Toffoli, or guy who could just finish, like he could just finish cross ice passes too. And then having a guy like Monahan who can kind of go in below the goal line, get in front of the net. I like the way the line matches up more than if you toss Vilardi down there, and then it's kind of like, well, we have to kind of just, you're cycling the puck below the goal line for that at that point. If those three are aligned, it's just, I like the dynamic ability that Ehlers brings to that second line. And I think that helps Toffoli and Monahan a lot more. And I mean, the Vilardi Connor line has shown that there are some issues in the D zone. And I think Jets fans know that, but I think you got to just take it. That's what comes with having an elite offensive first line, is that you need those guys to kind of just outscore their opposition. And if they don't, then you're probably not going to win a lot of games. But with the moves that they've made, and I think that's what the Jets are going to need to do, is just, you know, let those guys cook. That's what it is. Like, let Shifley, Connor, Vilardi cook. Have Lowry take kind of the tougher matchups, and then have Ehlers, Monahan, Toffoli really go out there and push their pace against maybe other teams' third lines if you're line matching at home.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get what you're saying, Tice, but for me, it's non-negotiable that your top line gets outscored. It can't happen. Outshot, maybe, if you're relying on high-quality chances there. But for me, I've seen enough to think that we're not going to get, you know, a 180 from those three being together. I agree with what you said about Ehlers and Toffoli matching up well, nicely on a pairing. I agree with that. That's why they're going up with Mark Scheifele for me. I wouldn't mind seeing Scheifele, Ehlers, Toffoli. I think Scheifele and Toffoli would be a nice fit together as well. And then you have Connor, Vilardi, Monahan, like you said, to go at other teams, potentially third lines. And you can play them a decent amount of time, right? Like, you don't have to give them 14 minutes a night. Bump that line up to 16, 17 minutes. And then I think things could get really, really interesting. I just feel like at this point, we've seen enough that when Scheifele and Ehlers are together, whether or not they enjoy playing with each other, they dominate the opposition. And when you're going up potentially against Dallas or Colorado in round one, yeah, you're going to have to figure out a way to get that line going, especially if Nathan MacKinnon is going to be the primary opposition in front of you each and every night. So that's how I would like to see it happen. I would agree that Rick Bonus is going to go with the lineup that you mentioned there, but we'll keep an eye on it. Would be nice. If the Connor Scheifele Vilardi line can get it figured out, that would be great. I just don't think it's going to happen. From up front to the back end now, Colin Miller makes his Jets debut, takes over Nate Schmidt. Maybe a minor surprise, maybe not. But he gets 13-48. And I thought he looked pretty good beside Dylan Sandberg. I will say this, and I know we're supposed to talk about the new guys here, but Miller and Sandberg as a third pairing completely dominated the shot metrics in the game against the Capitals. They were the Jets' two best players in that regard. We do need to start giving Dylan Sandberg, I think, more love here in the city, because it now just kind of feels like whoever you put beside him, they end up looking pretty damn good. I think Miller Sandberg are going to work great as a pairing, but Sandberg has just low key crushed it and been one of this team's most consistent players all season long.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, at this point now, it's not just a short sample size last year. You're going on to two full seasons now where the level of competition has increased a tiny bit more for Sandberg over this year, and he's still handling it extremely well. So I think that he's a guy that you, when his contract's up or when he's due for an extension, you hop up, give him seven years at whatever the cap's going up at rate, and lock him in to a reasonable deal going forward, because he's a guy he's just going to be steady for the next 10 years.
I love that, Ty. I love when you just like, we're going to give you the moon. It doesn't matter. I don't care. You were good for us here 7 years. I don't disagree with that. I would love to see the Jets go long term with Sandberg. RFA after this upcoming season. I mean, yeah, if you could actually, you know, beat that by a year, he's probably going to be this team's second pair left shot defenseman next year, assuming Dylan leaves in free agency. Yeah, you might want to lock him up before he gets 82 games in. From Sandberg's side, he's thinking, yeah, we can talk contract after I get 82 games in on your second pair. So, but yeah, I mean, what did you make of Miller's game? I mean, it kind of just looked the same way Sandberg and Schmidt have looked all season to me.
Yeah, he wasn't.
You just get a touch more size with Colin Miller, but I thought he looked just fine out there.
Yeah, and I honestly didn't notice him out that much. And when you're a third pairing defenseman, that's a good thing, right? Like, you don't want to be noticeable for the wrong reasons. And he made a couple nice plays like that. It was like a slap pass right on Perfetti's tape that the Perfetti just missed it. Or I can't remember if he missed or if he hit the post, but that was a really nice play, a nice heads up play. And he saw that develop from a ways out. So he's known as a guy that more so he's on the defensive side, but he does have some skill. Like Colin Miller, he's not inept in his own zone, and even he was on the power play to close the game. Now, granted, that's Pionk's in the box, Schmidt's scratched, so you're kind of left at who else is going to go out there. But still just another guy that you could throw out there. It just gives you depth in all different situations. I think Colin Miller is going to fit in seamlessly. Like, he just does a lot of the little things right. And, you know, maybe you just need to get out of a bad situation in Jersey where you're kind of carrying two younger guys who are still getting their feet wet in the NHL. It's without Dougie Hamilton, your best defenseman. So, you know, maybe you just needed to get out of that situation in Jersey, and this situation could be perfect for Colin Miller.
Yep. All in all, great debuts for the newest guys on the Jets, and a heck of a bounce back performance as well against the Capitals. And Tyson's right as well. Like, sneaky mandatory victory on top of it, with Dallas now having won five straight, Colorado starting to turn their game around. Yeah, please. First in the Central. They got to find a way to make that happen.
President's a trophy.
President's my ass. We don't need that. Come on now. Come on now. Let's just focus on the division title first. Now, this is kind of interesting, Tyson. Let's wrap up the episode on this. I want to bring this up to your attention and see if we're on the same wavelength here. You're talking President's Trophy. I'm talking the importance of finishing first to avoid Dallas, Colorado in round one. That was Connor Hellebuck's 47th game of the season. Laurent Brossoit has played 17 games this season. They've each, surprisingly, started and finished each of the games that they've played. How do we handle Connor Hellebuck's workload down the stretch here? Because it's an interesting balance, knowing that you can't overwork Helly with the potential of, I mean, not the potential, needing him for every single playoff game, and hopefully a long playoff run at that. Having him refreshed and rested and ready to go is going to go a long way in the Jets, potentially making this a multi-round voyage through the postseason. But you need wins. And then Dallas and Colorado aren't going to be dropping too many points down the stretch here. Here's my suggestion or recommendation for the Jets on this one. You've got 10 games upcoming that takes you into April. I think you need to do an even split of these next 10 games between Hellebuck and Brossoit. That as a total would give Brossoit, we'll just say Brossoit gets 22 games at that point, which means Hellebuck would have a maximum of 60 starts this season if he played the final, what do we got? 8 games in April, which is very unlikely, right? So that, I think, sets this team up and sets the goaltending situation up in the best way possible. I think they need to have a little more, not that they haven't had faith, but I think this team just needs to trust that Brossoit is one of the best backups in the NHL, and that this is going to be the best way to keep both goalies fresh no matter what situation happens down the stretch here. And you're avoiding Hellebuck getting into the mid-60s, which I think is, you know, a troubled territory, even with how good Hellebuck's been. So for the rest of the matchups through the month of March, Predators on Wednesday, then you've got the Ducks on Friday, Columbus Sunday. I might go Brossoit against the Ducks and the Blue Jackets. That's followed up by the Rangers, the Devils, and then a back-to-back on the road against the Islanders and Capitals, the Oilers, Golden Knights, and Sens. It's not the most daunting stretch of games, which is why I kind of think this might be the perfect time to get Brossoit in a number of these. Maybe you even give him that matchup against Vegas to go up against his old team. But, I mean, you're talking about games against the Ducks, the Blue Jackets, the Capitals, and the Senators. Four of those 10 games are against teams well below the playoff line. Then you've got, you know, the Devils, who have kind of faltered out of the race as well here. I mean, those are five non-playoff teams you're facing there. What do you think, Tice, in this next 10? Do you agree with that, or is Helly just, we're rolling with Helly until we get that division title locked up?
No, I agree with you 100% on, I think Helly gets Preds, Jets, and then I'm with you. I go Brossoit against the Ducks and Blue Jackets. Give Helly a little bit of an extended rest. Like, he hasn't not played in back-to-back games this year. So give him a little bit of a break between those two. And it still gives you that opportunity. It kind of plays into the players' minds a little bit too. Like, oh, and this isn't to say that Brossoit is a bad goalie, but it's just teams, your psyche just gets elevated whenever the backup's in net, right? Like, it's just, that's just the way it goes. So I wonder, you know, you play that game against the Predators, and then you have a Jets team that's kind of like a little bit more focused against a Ducks and Blue Jackets team than they would be otherwise. And then I'd probably go with Helly against the Rangers and Devils, and then go Brassois against the Islanders on Saturday, and then the Helly against the Capitals Saturday. And then I'd probably go Helly against the Oilers, and I might even go Brassois back-to-back, or not, it's not a back-to-back set, but against the Knights on the 28th, and then against the Sens again on the 30th. So, like, I kind of like giving LB a little bit more consecutive starts back-to-back here, and it's really not that much more. Like, you're giving them two stretches where he gets two straight starts. Like, and I think that he's played well enough this year to earn a couple consecutive starts, and really, you know, he still needs a contract at the end of this year too. So he wants to kind of put up some more tape, put up some more numbers, and that gives him an opportunity.
Yeah, no. And I think most importantly though, it's just, you're getting your backup some reps in, you know, knock on wood, but just in case, and you're giving Hellebuck a bit of a breather. And I think too, even giving Brassois some of those games where he gets back-to-back starts, like giving Hellebuck almost a week of rest is math. Like, that's massive. Totally. And the reason I mention all that too is because once April kicks off, these are the final eight games for the Jets: Kings, Flames, Wild, Predators, Stars, Avalanche, Kraken, Canucks. And I especially those final four, where three of those four, Stars, Avs, Canucks, there's the potential that those games mean a ton. And you don't want Hellebuck, you know, having played nine games in a row headed into that, right? So that's why I think this next stretch of games is going to be intriguing to see how the Jets handle the workload of both goalies there. And Brassois has really given this team no reason not to get him into the lineup more, because he's not at Connor Hellebuck's level. But a 924 save percentage in 17 games, he's not all that far off either right now. So that's what you brought him in for, is to keep Helly fresh in the stretch run here. So wouldn't mind seeing a little more LB as the month of March rolls along here. But we'll keep an eye on that and a whole lot more as we get closer to the final games of the regular season. But that's going to do it for the episode here today. We'll wrap it up there, and we'll get ready for the end of the week, which will include only one game for the Jets when we get back at it Friday. And that'll be against the red-hot Nashville Predators, a Central Division battle. So we'll break that one down and all the other news and notes around the NHL in that time as well. Until then, though, hope you guys have a great rest of your week. And thank you once again for listening to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. CJOB's Tyson Rewicki with us once again. We'll talk to you guys on a Friday morning. Enjoy the rest of your work week. Stay safe and have a good time, everybody. Peace.